A quick shout out to our sponsor, theboardsource.com, premium quality used surfboards. This is a place I go to buy and sell my boards. Theboardsource.com. They update their website daily. Theboardsource.com. Check it out. Our culture is graced with a melange of surfer archetypes and a litany of categories to fit these surfers into. Competitive aces, big wave legends, Groms on the rise, postmodern free surf ideologues, longboard stylists, longboarding shortboarders, shortboarding longboarders, angry local walrus dude, happy local walrus dude. And the list goes on, and many surfers that overlap into these various boxes. And before this interview, I probably couldn't have picked Dylan Longbottom out of a lineup. Dylan Longbottom is one of those surfers who I've heard his name hundreds of times. I've seen the hideous and inspiring waves he's successfully negotiated. I can definitely put him into the big wave charger, hell man, slab rider category. But I'd like to know more. We'd like to know more. His father was a surfboard builder in the Cronulla area. He was a stunt double for the remake of Point Break. And he was an early adopter at Chopu, the end of the road, pre-internet. And he shapes boards for a living, Dylan Surfboards. The Boardroom Podcast with Dylan Longbottom. Let us begin. So, Dylan, you were telling me your dad in the 70s, he was the GNS guy in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the glasser for Gordon & Smith Australia and a part owner for 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. From
the where was that?
In Cronulla.
Cronulla.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Cronulla. And it was huge back then in Australia.
Yeah.
And that's when PT was riding for him, MR would shape for him.
Right.
Simon Wan, all the crew.
Wow.
Were there.
I thought you were from New South Wales or the Gold Coast.
That is. Well, yeah. So I was born in Cronulla.
Okay.
And that's where my dad's from. And,
okay.
And then they used to run the world tour.
Right.
Him and his best mate, Graham Cassidy.
Oh, wow.
From Cronulla.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, they pretty much started the world tour.
Oh,
and PT was living with, moved to Cronulla from the Gold Coast. And he was living with my uncle. He was sponsored by Gordon Smith. And they were all Cronulla crew.
Oh, wow.
So I was born into that era.
So with Jim Banks.
Banksy was there. Yeah.
Now you're Banksy. You're with near and Banksy now, right?
Yeah, I share the factory. Work with Banksy in Bali.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so I hang out and he's classic. Yeah, so Banksy was there and Oki was there too. Oki was the grom working in the shop at Gordon Smith. That's where he started and he was sponsored by it.
Yeah.
In that same era. He was from Cronulla.
I remember rolling into Jim's surf shop in Cronulla in like 88 or something weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. So, okay, so you're from Cronulla. You grew up in Cronulla, obviously, right?
But yeah, then I moved when I was like seven, and we went to the south coast. We went south, so more to the country. Cronulla was the southern side of Sydney, the city. And we moved south. We moved like an hour and a half, 2 hours south to the country where it's called the south coast.
Yeah.
And just full of amazing waves and reefs and beaches and beautiful country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just wide open.
Wide open.
A little bit sharky, maybe.
Oh, they say, but we never seen any, you know. They're out there, but we never seen. And especially, well, like, in my later years when I started really hunting these slabs out to sea, that's where it's sharky.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, the fishermen told us there, but I didn't see it. So.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind, yeah. We don't want to be thinking of them.
Do you think that you got some of your you know, sort of this appetite for slabby, ledgy waves and when you moved south and you started to hunt – or not hunt, but you started to
–
because you sort of grew up as a teenager in these southern waves.
Right? That's right. I grew up as a teenager. Like, obviously, when we were young, we lived in squash courts and we played soccer and we played lots of sports, but we always surfed because Dad was a surfer and made surfboards. But as a teenager, we'd just explore this coastline and we'd start from the first reefs when we're like 12, 13, and then we'd go to another reef, another. And as we got older, yeah, I got this thirst for slabs and I was just trying to work out how to get in them because nobody was really riding in them back then.
Yeah.
And then I ended up just surfing a lot by myself.
Yeah.
And then
were you making boards that maybe had more volume up in the front so you could
not? I wasn't shaping then. At that time, I was sponsored by Nev.
Right,
Ironman. And
what year was this? Like 91 or something?
Oh yeah, this is like 90s.
Yeah, yes. So you're really flip nose, slipper nose. Nev
they
Hyman.
Were narrow, yeah. And yeah, it was through that whole era. So the boards didn't help at all.
They were thin.
Yeah. So I started shaping in 1999.
Yeah.
And that's when I really, because I was surfing these waves, but I had to make boards to suit, and nobody was really doing it.
Hmm.
So I was surfing it, and then at the time, I was traveling a lot. I got sponsored by Billabong. I've been with them 25 years now.
Hmm.
And I was luckily enough, I only done 1 year at WQS, and then they put me, I was lucky enough to be photogenic and good for the videos.
Yeah.
And I traveled a lot with Oki and Margo with the free surfers.
Mm-hmm.
And Munga Barry and Luke Egan, like them guys, and Rasta was younger than me, and then he ended up coming.
Mm.
So, I just go and find slabs, and I was going to Tahiti every year, to Chopu. I was going there like three times a year for every swell, and to Indo. So, and that was kind of my triangle, Indo, Tahiti, Australia.
Where did you surf in that QS event? And I want to say it was like 97 or 98 when it was right before it was the one that Kobe and Conan had.
Yes, that's right. No,
was that like 98 or something?
Yeah, it was late 90s.
It's really the one that put Chopu on the map as far as media. It just went, holy crap, you guys.
Yeah.
You weren't in
that? No, I wasn't in that. I went there before that. It was a Surfing Life trip for a magazine in Australia.
Mm.
And Billabong sent me, and it was with Munga Barry and Margo and Poto and his brother took care of us.
Okay.
And they took us to the end of the road.
Yeah.
We had no idea. And this was probably like 96.
Mm.
And we got it sheet glass, like 6 to 8 foot, this bending slab. And we were like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
And it was about, they didn't call it Chopu. It was known as end of the road.
Yeah.
And then that comp happened a couple of years later.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You were sort of pioneering, at least from the Australian standpoint. I know the Tahitians were on it forever, but
the Tahitians were, and then I was lucky enough to create this relationship with Poto at Manoa Drillet.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up, and then because Billabong ended up sponsoring him, and I was going there, so he become kind of my tow partner, and I'd go stay with him, and he'd come stay with me in Australia.
Perfect.
And I was his tow partner for like 10 years, and I just we're towing it a lot of days by ourselves.
Yeah.
It was not like what is now.
No.
And paddle days, it was like pumping. There'd be no one out. Like no one wanted to get hurt.
Yeah.
And we were just like, we were surfing it, just boardies, no vests, towing it with like the thinnest vest.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were kind of pioneering it, yeah.
Well, let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
Your father, you said, as you mentioned, your father worked for GNS forever and was in the board building industry. And did he make you some of your boards as a kid?
Was
that all you were riding?
Yeah.
Was that GNS?
That was GNS. Yeah. So I still got them. They were in a museum in Australia, but they're in my brother's surf shop now.
Mm.
And yeah, my first surf was a Twinny, and it's the classic retro, super thick, short, single flyer, sat fin, and it's got this airbrush. Mine is Gene Simmons. And my brother's is Ace Frehley from Kiss.
Yeah.
And mine, and on the front, it's a star with Dylan. And on the front is Darren, my brother.
Mm.
And they're polished finished and they're classic, man. It's the best airbrush you'll ever see in your life.
That's cool.
It actually looks, mine looks like Gene Simmons with his tongue out the guitar.
Yeah.
I'll show you a picture, but they're sitting in my brother's surf shop. Yeah.
That's pretty
and,
cool.
And so, yeah, we grew up getting all these boards and we were little kids, me and my brother.
Yeah.
At the factory, you know, and then there was like pictures of Shark Island on the wall of Banksy and Oki was the grommet working in the shop.
Yeah.
And then all of these, all the shapers would come in. It was pretty cool, Gina, because they had, and they were surfer shapers then, like, and that's what I like. And I was like, these guys were like heroes to me. I'd be just there, like, you know, I cleaned the bays as a grom and they were just like heroes, you know.
Yeah,
I was just like,
that's crazy.
And how the surf shops were there and the boards and it was cool. Rewrite skaties and get food for the guys. And
so when you moved to the South, your dad wasn't working for GNS anymore?
Yeah, so he still traveled back up to
up
to Cronulla. But then also there was he's a Californian. His name's Mike Davis, MD, and he had a factory in Kiama, and he glassed there for another.
Where's Kiama relative to Cronulla? Or
it's pretty much 2 hours south of Cronulla.
Okay.
Or 30 minutes south of Wollongong,
right?
Or you know, 2 hours north of Ulladulla.
Yeah.
So, yeah, an MD was a bit of a figure in town, and Dad Glass there.
Okay.
Yeah, as well as Genius. Mm. He done both.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that where you – I know you didn't start shaping for quite a long time after that, but,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, you sort of got mentored even, like, subconsciously by all these people, just by being a Grom around the factory, right?
Exactly, yeah, I did. It kind of happened like that. And then, you know, just through life, you go through school, and then I was, and then I went straight onto the tour, and but I was sponsored by Nev then, because I was getting boards from MD and Dad, and then I went to Skip Surfboards in Wollongong, and then Terry Richardson,
yeah,
former pro, he picked me up when I got sponsored by Billabong, which was unreal because I really looked up to Richo.
Yeah.
He was from our area.
Yeah.
And he was a good mentor for me. And
was he making your boards too?
Yeah, he was making it. So, and then that was like about 95, 96, and that was so cool to work with him.
Yeah.
And then it was Nev for the last few years. But then, you know, I was surfing, but I wasn't quite getting enough to survive.
Yeah.
And then my wife got pregnant.
How old were you?
I was at this time. I was this going up to I was 25 or 24.
Yeah,
and that's when I done my bricklaying apprenticeship out of school because I couldn't survive.
But back up a little bit. Did you ever do any of like the pro juniors or any of the?
Yeah,
I
done all the pro juniors,
all the big stuff. Yeah, yeah. As a Gromman, those are huge contests.
I done all the pro juniors and all that, and then went on the QS. I won a lot of local stuff, but the pro juniors, I was always up there. I get to the final, semi, I was up there. And then, but it was my free surfing when I was about 19. That's when Billabong just went, we're just going to, I loved taking off on slabs and I loved doing airs.
Right.
So I was really photogenic.
Right.
So I got to do all the magazine shit.
And this is around 19 or 20 or 21.
Yeah,
When did you get married?
I've been with my partner now for 25 years, the same. Okay. So, yeah, she's 16, turning 17, and I was 20, turning 21.
Radical.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's been with me for the whole lot, which has been so
poor
cool.
Woman.
Poor woman, yeah. Oh, I know. She's a legend to put up with me. And what And then I was like doing these free surf trip, but I was bricklaying at home with my mates, which was cool. To survive, but then I said to my missus, I said, "I don't want to do this, you know. I want to surf, but I want to shape."
Yeah.
She's just like, "Well, do it," and I was like, "Really? Are you cool with that?" And a lot of people went, "No, you gotta stay building, you know. You gotta support your wife." And then she was pregnant, and I was like, "She's like, nah." So I bought my, and then because subconsciously I was there in the factories as a kid, and that's what I wanted to do. So I bought the planer, went to the local factory and said, look, I bought a blank and I shaped it.
Who did you talk to there to kind of guide you along?
It was a local factory down in Jeringong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I said to him, can I shape? And they're like, yeah, no worries, and just do this and that. And
so was there a guy that was like, hold the planer like this? Like,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Damn. Yeah.
Who was that?
His nickname was Egg. What's his real name? Oh, I'll come back to it. That's good.
Yeah, no worries. I'm just wondering, you must have had some guys that were fundamental to your growth as a craftsman.
As a shaper. Yeah. So, yeah, it was him initially because in that first board was one of the best board I ever rode. Yeah. Better than anything I got off of Nev and I couldn't believe it. This board, and I knew what I wanted, and then I created it. And then I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I was cosplaying in the air, and the first ever air show in Australia, I ended up coming second to Aussie Wright, and I was this board. I just could do anything on it for our coastline. So I was just like, I want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The first one was just amazing. I ended up keeping it and snapping it and putting it together. But that, I always related back to that board, you know, the board the concave and the outlines. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And then so. It was him that helped me, and then it was a guy called Ralph Riddell. And then it was like this stepping stone over the years, and then Insight offered me to come shape with them, and they done
shape. What year was that?
This was about 2000, 2001,
uh-huh.
And that's in Sydney on the Northern Beaches.
Yeah.
So my free surfing career was still taking off, but then my shaping was starting to go with it.
Yeah.
Because I was getting all the magazines with my logo.
And so this was like a full-time gig, basically, at Insight. Like, they're like, dude, we need you to
Yeah, so I'd go up there 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And they'd done Channel Islands as well.
Yeah.
And Simon Anderson was there. So yeah. It was Simon, the Channel Island shaper, and I was the Insight surfboard shaper.
Yeah.
So, and that was so cool. I'd done that for 3 years, but it was too taxing. It was like, had to go right through the city from the country. It was like a 2.5 hour drive.
Yeah.
And then I had my young child, and it was just too much. But then I wanted to stay because it was so cool. And I learned so much of Simon and the crew. And that's when the first machine cuts came out. It's called Abro cutting. And they had things on the side. And I had to plane my boards, make these files. And then that's how I learned that part after planing for like maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
So then I learned this machine with Insight and Channel Island. But then at that time, Mercury kept taking off more with Billabong, the free surfing. And then Billabong surfboards, Billabong wanted to make surfboards with JS.
Mm-hmm.
So JS called me and offered me contract to come move to the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
So then my wife was like, oh, she loves the Goldie. Let's move up. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Because it was too long drive to Sydney. So I said to guys Insight, unfortunately, they've offered me something really good. Sponsored by Billabong. We're going to make Billabong surfboards and you can do your own on the side.
Yeah.
And then so I ended up with JS for 9 years shaping under him, which was my biggest influence as a shaper.
Yeah.
I learned so much and that's when he was really coming big and he was a leader, you know. And this was like from maybe 2003 to 2010. So I got to base on the Gold Coast right with Billabong. I'd take off lights and I was shaping there every day. And I'd be shaping my boards, Billabong boards, his boards.
Yeah.
And we used profilers. We didn't use machines then.
Yeah.
It was all profilers. And he had hundreds of templates and we'd route out and it would be block square, but there was still a lot of work in these boards.
Yeah.
For about...
When you say profilers, you mean like rail, like...
No, so you get a raw blank and it wasn't a machine.
Yeah.
So you'd have these side, a profiler, you'd have these profiles of your bottom curve and your deck curve, and you'd have these routers and you route up like this train track. So it was manually done.
It was basically a man-powered machine.
Yes, a man-powered machine.
Yeah.
And it's called a profiler in Australia, and lots of guys were using them. And that's what you used before the machines.
Yeah.
But then the machines started to come out, but JS boards were going so good with these, you know, and mine were coming out good. But then we had to convert, and then the machines come out. They're Mickey's APS 3000.
Yep.
And then we had to reinvent ourselves and learn this whole new procedure. So and that was about 2006.
Yeah.
And then I had to change my shaping again and adapt and make files and
trial
and error. And
how's that process?
But like, it was unreal. It was, you know, I had to really dive in and learn
the software
and then see how that come out and then change and make files and you know, measure everything and put that onto the program.
Yeah.
Or everything I liked, and took a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
But it was a blessing in disguise because now I get to travel the world.
Yeah.
And I got all my favorite models and files and team rider, and I can travel the world now with my decals and all my hand tools. I just take my surf form and my blocks and planers, little planers and my decals.
Yeah.
And it's allowed us to really use what we want to put in our mind instead of planing and trial and error and all these hours spent. We can do it on our program and change things and go, wow, look at this, widen the tail, do this, put more curve, the big guns, do this. And you could do it without all the cost of blowing blanks and stuffing up ones or making good ones. So it was unreal. Like some people are like offer like old school, but for us, it's so handy, you know, and it's really helped us take making surfboards to the next level.
Well, look, I think every surfboard manufacturer that's really in business understands that it's a numbers game, and just to compete, you have to be cutting boards off of a machine. Now, there's a few guys that are like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, for hand sure. Shape and only if you can do, you know, you want to do one or two or five a week, you can do it, you know, you don't, you know, and, But for us now, you know, we're doing, you know, if I'm sometimes in Bali, I'm doing like 50 to 80 a week. Sometimes in Australia, I do 10 a day. So at nighttime, I can sit behind the computer and play around the designs, what I'm really thinking, and then get it close. Yeah. And I don't get it exact. And then when I get in the shaping bay, and then I can do them finer touches, what I like.
Yeah.
And it makes it's I'm getting more accurate and more precise. And it's awesome.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. This is actually a good segue, because I'm wondering, what do you think surf culture in general is going to look like in, say, I don't know how many years, but when the shaper doesn't exist, when we're all riding incredible surfboards, but they're all produced via robotic machines, there is no more Dylan Longbottom. There's no more Scott calling Dylan and going, hey, I'd like to get a board. I'm not going to blah, blah, blah. Can you make me a 6'2" or whatever?
Yeah.
When that's gone, when I'm just – what do you think that does for surf culture?
Okay. Well, that's what – I've thought about that. And now, because I still use a machine, I'm still shape. I'm still my hands on, and every day I shape wherever I am in the world. But I'm also designing as well. So, but now I've heard about this robot that does it, and I've seen it some Channel Islands once done, and it's still, I got it super close, but you still have to do some minor touches.
Yeah.
But that could be, if it does go that way, it's going to be the board designer, not so much the board shaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be like more brand, you know, like a Ford, or a Ford car or a Chevrolet. They're designing the cars. Which is the shaper. So the shape is really, and we're still going to be touching and fixing this, because the finest details when you glass it and this and the edges, it's the shaper, which is the designer.
Yeah.
He's still going
to be. But I'm saying, like, even like 100 years from now.
Oh, 100
there's
years.
There's no friggin', like, I don't call you to have you make me my MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
I just
go
to the Apple store and get a killer one.
Yeah.
No, well, what's missing from that is that I don't get to call you.
Yeah.
I don't get this. I don't get to go, hey, Dylan, blah, 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 Chopu last week, blah, blah, blah. And you and I don't get to correspond and have a relationship. And the stories that you tell me about your surf trips and my stories I tell you about my surf trips, all of this part, this fabric, this weave of what it is unique about the surfer-shaper relationship is now gone.
Yeah. I'm a bit scared of that, because that's my whole thing, and that's all my customers love that. I make myself available to everyone, and especially with social media now, I'm so connected with everyone, whether they want to order one, talk about one, need this, I'm going here, and I create this relationship with everyone around the world, and I learn about them and where they are and what they surf, and helps me, and that interaction between the surfer and the shaper is critical, and that's my whole thing, and they love that too, because we and then we work on the future, whether they sing. So to if we lose, I don't think that will ever happen, honestly, even in 100 years, because somebody's going to make the boards, you know, and that's the most important thing, is to be connected to the shaper, where a lot of the bigger brands don't have that. And I instill that to all my guys, all the shops. Like, I'm here, just go, if they want to talk to me, you can get me on Instagram, Facebook, email, phone call, WhatsApp, and go, hey, oh, I'm 45 now, and I'm not serving as much, and I just need some more volume, and I'm wearing a 4.3 too, you know. So that's critical.
Yeah.
I think.
For sure.
And that have that information to shaper/designer. Designer.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a unique place and space because it's really the last piece of equipment that's has this relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. Because and it's still, you know, I stock boards, but I focus more on the custom, because then having that availability to talk to me, and it's customized product.
Yeah.
And which everybody's different. Everybody's body shape's different. Everybody surfs different.
Yeah.
Everybody lifts some. So one model, I'm doing so many variations of sizes and thicknesses and volumes and colors and glass job. So I think that will always be like that because that's surfboards. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's going to become this generic like pop outs in China and then with no brand or some crazy brand with no shape or design and no interaction.
Yeah,
I don't think surfboards will ever lose that.
Well, I hope not. I'm just kind of I'm just throwing out this real futuristic concept with no sort of subjective. I don't want to put any dogma on it. I just I just want you and I to go, wow, in 200 years when we're long gone, it could be that robotics and artificial intelligence have got to a place where they can pump out. I can go onto the website or whatever and tell them I gained 40 pounds and I'm wearing a 4.3 and I need more volume. And, you know, so I don't know if it can work out. Hi, how are you? Come on in.
This is Summer.
Hi, Summer.
Hello. Hello. This is Scott. So, yeah, this is my daughter. She's 16.
Yeah.
And she's a great surfer.
Yeah, I've seen you. I've seen you surfing online. I've seen some photos of
her. She's Nazare at 13.
Radical.
She come to Chopu when I filmed Point Break.
Yeah.
I was a stuntman for that movie, and she was 11. So
cool.
4 weeks, the first 4 weeks of the movie, she got to hang out that lad, and his daughters were there too. So got to hang with them. And
how was that, and Point Break? That was fun.
It was so good,
what an experience.
Oh, that must have couldn't believe it because Point Break was one of my favorite movies.
How did that go down? I mean, give me some – I know you've told the story a million times.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done some research on it.
Yeah.
I wanted to stay away from the stuff that you always tell people, but it's interesting, right?
The media guy for Billabong, Jonathan Jenkins, they found me through him. They looked me up. They wanted the stunt, and they wanted two people in the script. And they needed Bodie and Johnny Utah on the same wave. And it was, they say in the movie itself, the coast of France, but they wanted the Chopu.
Mm-hmm.
And then they looked all into it. And the Code Red, which is the biggest swell in history there. And the Code Red documentary by Billabong was about me and Laurie Towner that whole day and what happened. And they seen how we wrote it. And it was ironic that I matched Bodie's description in the face and Laurie Towner matched Johnny Utah. It was the blonde hair and I had the scruff brown hair. And so he contacted me. He's like, hey, they want you as a stuntman for Billabong, Point Break. And I was like, get out of here. You were here? And he's like, yeah. You want to do it? I was like, of course, 100%. I'm in. What do I do? And Laurie was like, yeah. So we had to wait for a swell. You know, all the contracts got in, and I couldn't kind of believe it was happening until it happened.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until like a year later, and it happened. They're like, all right, the swell's coming. And then we get there, and there's, you know, there's like 300 people working on this film, and producers and movie stars and this and that, and I'm just like, wow. And then the swell's coming. It was the biggest swell of the year.
Are the guys there? Is
so, and then we had all backup surfers. Reeves there? This is the remake. Yeah, so I was stoked because Gerard Butler, that's what was supposed to be Bodie.
Oh, okay, this isn't Keanu Reeves?
No, that's the original one.
Oh, okay,
So that was made like late
80s.
I'm
not a fan, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, no, the original one was made late 80s.
Right.
Yeah, with Keanu Reeves.
Okay, so this one's got who?
Yeah, and this one was made. This we filmed 2013, so this is the remake.
And it's got who are the actors?
Yeah, so it's supposed to be Jared Butler who done Chasing Mavericks. Right. So I was stoked, but then he pulled out last minute, and it was I forget, the Aussie guy was a really good actor, was Johnny Utah, and guy from Venezuela, Edgar Ramirez.
Oh,
you heard of Edgar Ramirez? Hollywood. He's a pretty much Hollywood star now. He's been in all the big movies with Pierce Brosnan and all that.
Sure.
And he was cool and he was just tripping out. Like he was in the boats and the skis and he was just like, oh my God. Like the producers couldn't believe. So anyway, I'll backtrack.
Yeah.
So the afternoon before the biggest swell, it was shown super west, as big as it gets, super clean. And then we got our backup. So me and Laurie, the number one stuntman. And then I had Billy Kemper behind me as my backup and Laurie had Bruce Irons.
Mm-hmm.
And then Laird Hamilton was a vagabond. He was his real name in the movie. Mm-hmm. Was towing Johnny Utah, and Ray Mana was towing me, Bodie. And they're having this meeting, 300 people, and they're like, all right, it's going to be this big. And me and Laurie sitting there, and then they're just like, we look at each other. And they go, we'll shut the whole lineup down. No locals allowed to surf, no pros. The lineup is for Dylan and Laurie. And we're just gone. And it's going to be 20 to 40 feet. So, and I'm just looking at him going, holy shit. And then we're just like, oh, we start to get, you know, it's always before the swell where you kind of get a bit of anxiety. And
oh, for sure.
And then the morning come and it was super clean, glassy, and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
But yeah, some heavy shit went down, and some of the big guys didn't want to get out of lineups. So
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like,
so and then some heavy shit went down. And,
what was going down?
So because my tow partner Manoa Drillette, he didn't get. They employed all the Tahitians, but he didn't get
asked.
But he wanted a bit too much money. They were saying, but I don't know. But he was my good mate. And then there was a bunch of other guys like Anthony Walsh and these crazy big wave charges. They're like, you guys can't kick us out. And I was just like, yeah, oh, man, I'm just doing mine. You talk to them.
Huh.
But at this time, they're trying to clear the lineup for us.
Who's trying to clear it? Poto and those guys?
Mainly Romana.
Because I know there's a little bit of politics even within the Tahitian crew.
Much politics. And I was just like, I was just kind of in the middle of everything. Yeah. And I just want to do my job.
Yeah.
And
when you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But so Laird started telling Laurie, but I was with Ramana, but Ramana was bringing the papers from the government, going, we're allowed to shut the lineup down to these guys. So I'm on the back of his sled going, it's pumping, come on, let's just go. Like, let him surf.
Yeah.
Just let him surf, let's go. But Laurie got two crazy ones.
Yeah.
Amazing. He was just like, hurry up. Come on, Ramana, let's go. I want to do it.
So you're frothing because you're seeing Laurie.
I want to get the jitters out, get my first one under my belt. So then as I got back out the back, Laurie went this big Super West one, Laird got him, but it was a closeout and it was so big and thick and he had the right line speed, but there was no exit.
Yeah.
It was a closeout.
Yeah.
And he pretty much was going that fast and it closed out and he ended up going headfirst into the reef.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it was so bad. And I was out the back, didn't know. And then I found out after I got my first wave, which was sick when I made that. I was like, oh, I was really low tide and warpy and
west.
And still super west and low tide. It was gnarly.
Oh, my God.
So, and then they've come back and then Laurie's going, so what's happened? And Laird goes, he's fucked. The chopper's coming. And I'm like, is he all right? Is he alive? Or, yeah, he's alive. He's going to be fine. He's just like hit his head. And he was lucky because he got knocked out, but he come to it underwater. He didn't know how long. But he woke up in the lagoon, and when Laird come to save him, he goes, am I all right? Am I all right? Like, he was in shock. And he goes, nah, you're done. Like, oh, and his blood. And he lost feeling all his face, half his face. Mm. And luckily they chopped him to the hospital, and they had, like, microsurgery on his face. And then they had to ring his wife, and he just had a baby too.
No.
And then I was out the back. I was freaking out. Oh, I was stressing about him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I had to do this job. I got choppers in the air, drones, boats with cranes.
You got people in your ear? I got people in my ear,
and then we're doing the job. So then I had to refocus, and then Bruce comes in as the backup for Johnny Utah, and then it was me and Bruce.
Hey, a quick interruption in the podcast to tell you about our sponsor, The Board Source, theboardsource.com. High-quality, used, premium surfboards, killer longboards, killer fishes, killer alternative surfboards, and a bunch of high-performance boards as well, and new boards. Theboardsource.com, updating their website daily. Go check them out, theboardsource.com. And now back to the podcast.
So I was lucky. I kind of kept thinking of Laurie for the day, just kind of checking, is he okay? And they're going, he's okay. So I was like, sweet.
And you and Bruce are supposed to be on the same wave together, right?
So they go, look, we won't ask you to do it, but let's just get singles and we'll warm up. So we're getting single waves. And then I looked at Bruce and I said, let's do it, man. He goes, yeah, man. And like Bruce is like, yeah, man, let's do it. So and
how did you determine who was going to be behind
so
you?
It was Bodie's wave and Johnny Utah drops in.
Right.
And then I had
Johnny Utah's a dick.
Yeah, yeah, like Bodie's a surfer. And then I had to cross over him, and then I got to look. But then I had to look back and go, follow my line.
That's in the script.
That's in the script.
Yeah.
And then so I had to go at Chopu, but I had to look backwards. I'm going the other way, but I'm looking into the barrel back at Bruce going, follow my line. He's just looking at me going, yeah. But I was lucky. I've surfed Chopu so much from Manoa and that over the years. I knew my line, so I knew I could do it. And then after the first one, I'd done it. I mean, this is sweet. I can do it. Like I can look backwards. I'm going left, but I'm looking into the barrel.
Yeah,
and I'm just knowing my line.
Yeah, trust.
So we've done it a bunch, and they're all just tripping out. They go, "This is it! Oh my god!" And this was me just dropping in, and because they go, "I don't want you to cross," and I was like, "Okay." So I was just in front of.
Yeah,
him. Yeah. He was behind me. And a few times I went a bit too deep, which I just made it, but he got hammered.
Yeah.
Bruce.
Yeah.
He got hammered.
Yeah.
And then, but a few we made it, and it was so good. We got so much good footage. But then I said to Bruce, I said, let's do the double. And the guys that all run the bridge goes, you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we went, all right. I started way up the reef. He comes straight. I come across the wave. And then this set come. And I was like 100 meters deep, but I just got so much. I said, give me so much speed, Rammer. He went down, let go of the rope. He went straight down. And then I come flying across the top on the wave, crossed his wake, and then come down. And then we pulled in. And then I look back and go, follow my line. And he was like, went down. And he's like, he didn't know where I was. And then he's like, see me? He's like, whoa. And then we pulled it off, this crazy thing.
No, really.
And then we all got to the boat. They got there and then just everyone's cheering and we nailed it. And that was the clip. They didn't think we'd be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
But we'd done it. Like it was Bodie's wave. Johnny Utah dropped in,
crossed
over, looked back, followed my line.
Right.
And then all this other shit. And then because when you come kick out, the closeout, you can't go so fast. You're going like 70, 80 kilometers an hour. And you got to really get your line in, get your bottom turn, and then you kick out. And I was just going forward, diving like 20, 30 feet in the air. And they were like, oh, this is sick. We're going to put this in the movie. So they said, kept doing that. And then all this other stuff, I'd do underwater scenes before it, you know, because then I had to go down and set, because I had to go down and save him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd do all these underwater scenes, which was really hard.
Yeah.
There's heaps more to it. But
that's cool.
Yeah.
What an exciting.
And on top of that, before it, they asked me to make all the boards for the movie. So I made like 30 boards. I made like 10 tow boards, 5 red, which was Bodie's, 5 blue for Johnny Utah, and all the paddle boards again. Yeah. There was about 12 blue ones and about 12 like paddling for Chopu from 6'2 to 6'8, like my Predator model, you know, the thick get in early. And I was stoked because like Billy Kemper and all the boys and Bruce and Laurie, they all rode my boards and just loved it.
Yeah.
So not only I was making the movie – everyone was riding my boards and I was getting all this feedback. I had 5'8 tow boards with 5 kilos, I had 5'10 and they were just frothing. They want to keep the boards and the Tahitian backups as well.
Yeah.
So I had this bonus as being the shaper for the surfboards for the movie and getting feedback from the best guys in the world.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, man.
And a great payday, I would imagine.
Oh, it was the best payday ever.
Hollywood Union scale stunt payday.
It was the best day ever, and that's what...
Now you've got your card, right? You've got your Screen Actors Guild card because of this, I think.
Yeah, well, I can do stunt. I'm a stuntman for movies, but another one hasn't come up.
Yeah. But, do you have an agent that markets
you? No, well, I just spoke to – I just come from Robbie Madison's house, the motocross guy,
yeah.
And he does a lot of stunt movie.
Yeah.
So – and he's – I say, man, you're lucky because a lot of movies use in motorbike.
Yeah.
And it's – they're such good gigs, so – but there's not so much surfing movies. So, yeah. But the producers – I've stayed in one with a guy from L.A. and the actor, and I said, you know, because I matched the actor. Yeah. And I said, if anything comes up, let us know, Ben, then – they were stoked, and with Laurie, and they'd like to work with them. So anything comes up for sure, but no movies come up since. So.
Yeah.
All good. I've kind of been busy anyway.
Yeah.
I got three kids, and I shape. I got to travel the world shaving. I was in Australia last week. Week before, I was in Bali. Week before that, I was in Portugal. Now I'm here for a week, and then I go to Australia, Bali.
When you go to Australia, where do you go? To the Goldie?
Gold Coast?
Yeah. Are you still in the JS factory? You got a little
No, I got my own factory. I got my own factory in Wollongong.
Okay, yeah.
Where my dad and brother live.
Right.
And then I bounce between there and the Gold Coast because family, right. They go to school.
Right.
And they want to base south. They're living there.
Where on the Gold Coast?
Just right near at Snapper Rocks.
There. Okay, yeah.
Okay. Greenmount.
Yeah.
Cool and Gutter.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, base there. That's a good place. We were living in Bali,
yeah.
But because of the teenage years, we wanted to finish school.
Yep.
It was a bit hard with the school.
Yep.
So my wife was like, let's base back here for a couple of years, but then every second week I go to Bali.
Yeah.
And I do all my boards, have my shops there.
And I
time it. I go a week before, I go, what's the swell going to look like? Oh, it's a big swell. I'll wait till the week after.
Yeah.
And then I'll stretch it out, or it's a big swell like tomorrow. So I'll go, surf the swell, shape. Do a week shaving and then go back to Australia.
And that's in Canggu somewhere?
Canggu, yeah.
Canggu. And how's the – it seems to me, and maybe please correct me if I'm wrong, but Bali seems friggin' crowded. And I don't mean surfers. I mean just friggin' people.
It is. Hey, summer.
It's a bit of a nightmare.
It is. Right? So because the population's so large and it's a third world country and it's more so on the roads.
Well, that's what I mean.
But, yeah, the tourists, it's good for me as a business because so many tourists can come and, like, millions and millions from every corner of the earth, they want to come to Bali. Europeans, like, the people from Switzerland, Germany, they don't surf, but they'll come to Bali for 2 months and they'll surf. They love it. It's crazy.
I've under the – in fact, Jim Banks and I talked about this a little bit, but it seems like the Balinese people have this new sort of fascination with the car. And I don't think that island can handle any more cars.
Oh.
But it's kind of a status symbol if you're a muckety muck in Bali. Bali.
And because before Bali was all rice fields and trees and beautiful, but now it's just become – I go back every week and there's a new building. Right. So they sell the land and they buy a fancy car.
Yeah.
So thousands and thousands of these cars are now on the roads and just clog the roads on top of the motorbikes.
It's just crazy.
And they won't spend the money to fix the roads.
Yeah.
And it's just a nightmare.
It seems like it's kind of going the wrong direction. Like,
yeah.
Is there anyone in the government kind of trying to rein this in?
Well, that's what I keep saying to the locals. I go, why don't they? You know, they can make this so good. But because Bali is Hindu,
yeah.
A lot of others Muslim, they don't want to do anything to Bali. They're like, leave it. And but then the Hindu, they got temples everywhere,
yeah.
And they're at like single level house height, and they're not allowed to build roads over it.
Mm.
Height. So I said, why don't they? They're not allowed to because they're not allowed to build anything above their Hindu structures and temples and the shrines. So they're just leaving it,
yeah.
And it's just like it's chaos.
Yeah.
It's sad because it's such a cool. Everyone loves it. Everyone goes there. The food's great. The waves are great. Everything. But it's chaotic. And now Canggu, like, because I've been there for now 10 years.
Yeah.
So I've seen it go from rice fields and Warungs to this mecca of hipster cafes and Warungs and fancy
like
hotels.
Like Echo Beach, that area.
Echo Beach, yeah, this big area, Echo Beach and Brawa.
Mm.
And it's become the scene.
Yeah.
So, no, they come there to surf, but people that don't even surf go there.
I know.
On holidays.
I sometimes wonder if we're imprinting too much Western culture on a really groovy thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's because of money. It's they just want them. They need the money, and it's like they want the money, and let's build another one. And everyone's opening a business there, an expat, and yeah, it's really westernized. Yeah. But it's kind of cool. Like they've still got little rooms where we can go in here for $2, be the most $2,
yeah,
be the most amazing big plate of fresh food.
Yeah,
like yeah,
like organic right there in Chengdu, like
in Chengdu, yeah, yeah. They're everywhere in Bali.
Yeah,
yeah. So there's still that, and yeah. I hope they don't get overridden by all these new fancy cafes and restaurants, and because you can spend $2 for a lunch or dinner, but you can go spend $200. At this fancy restaurant.
I know.
But people are doing it. There's like, there's something for everyone there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you go to Portugal in shape, are you at Pucas or something?
No, with Org surfboards. Oh. So they invited me about 3 years ago, 3.5. And it was pretty crazy because they invited me and they didn't really know about it. But I was like, my wife, my good mate goes, you know, you got to go there and open this door. And then I checked them out, and they sponsor all the Nazare guys and all the Chargers. And I went, oh, this is perfect because that's my scene.
Yeah.
And I sponsor Laurie Towner, and that's what I ended up becoming a big wave surfer. I went, oh, and then I went there and met him, didn't know him from Barra Soap. And then the two guys are the best guys at Nazare, paddling and towing.
Yeah.
And their lead head shape of Rabbit, he's a legend. He's the best shape port in just – so it, we – made this connection, and then I started surfing Nazare.
Crazy.
Yeah. And then I've been learning my boards at Chopu and Bali and tow boards, paddle boards. And then I end this into this whole new realm of Nazare, where it's the epicenter now of big wave surfing, of paddling, biggest wave ever, and towing it.
What's that wave like when it's 3 to 4 feet?
It's a crazy shory.
Is it fun?
It depends on the sand. No, it's fun.
Yeah.
It gets good.
Yeah.
It gets really good. So, and actually, summer surfed it before me. I was out there, but it was like
big Nazare.
It was like 10 feet.
Yeah.
But maybe like 50.
Are you guys towing?
Towing? Yeah. She was only young. She was 13.
Holy crap.
And but we put the vest on, and we had the best guys from Nazare. We had 3 skis.
Yeah.
And I was on one, the safety one, out the back, and it was late arvo, and we had to wait for a load of time. There was no one out.
Yeah.
And there was probably like, it was picking up, it was rising swell, it was getting dark, and it was kind of spooky.
Dad's rescuing.
I was more scared for than her.
Yeah.
But she was, but they were like 20-foot faces. They were still big.
Oh, for sure.
And then the first one came, and she was just like, oh, froze the rope. My mate was just like, holy shit, she wants it.
Yeah.
And she was like, whoa. But she was on a borrowed tow board, which is too big for her because she was a lot littler then.
Yeah.
And we go, oh, it's not that big. We'll just put one life jacket on her.
Yeah.
Because we thought, ah, oh, it's not that big. We should have put two or the pull cord.
Yeah.
Because she ended up getting 4 waves and bombs, and she was loving it. She was into it. She's like, well, one more. But it was getting nearly dark.
Yeah.
And I was feeling there's a guy on the cliff shooting, and he got a smaller one. But you see, it's still big. She looks tiny. But the fog come, and she couldn't say stop shooting. But this massive one come. It must have been like a 25-foot face.
Mm.
She took off and rode it down, hey, and it mowed her down.
Mm.
She looked up and just, boy, you got the biggest wipeout of your life, didn't you? Yeah, and I was out the back on the other safety. I was trying to shoot because I knew there was another other camera. And there was the two guys, Antonio was the main guy. And he's the best out there. He's the best driver, Antonio Silva, who's sponsored by Org Surfboards. And him and Joe DiMacedo. And Sergio was there too, and he's the best ski driver as well in Portugal. He works with all the crew.
Yeah.
But I kind of got the thing that she wiped out, and then because I'd seen him punch, I was like, oh, I seen the next one. I was like, oh, no. So I went over this giant lump, and then there was another one. I'm like, I started really stressing out. You know? But I was just knew Antonio was there. But Antonio couldn't get to her, so she took 4 on the head, 4. And then she lost so much energy and turning it, and it was washed. It kind of doesn't wash out the beach. It circles it in the shorey.
Yeah.
And he just went, oh, stuff this. And he went in and grabbed her by one hand, kept the hand on the throat, picked up left hand.
Yeah, he grabbed
like a cat. Right, and then just had to punch one, got air and holding her and saved her.
Gnarly.
And then come and out. She had no energy. Because he went, the second one, he said grab, but she had no energy to grab because she got so flogged. He went, and then there was one more. So the fourth, he goes, he had to grab her. Mm. And then got out the back and she was like, but mentally she was okay. Physically she was done. She was like, but everyone was clapping and just going, wow, this was.
And how did the missus take this?
Well, she didn't really know. We didn't tell her the full depth.
Is this the first time she's going
to? But then it got dark and I didn't get to surf it because I wanted someone to have it. It wasn't really big. I was like, I wanted big. So anyway, last year, and then I got to surf the slabs and all these other crazy waves, meet all the Portuguese surfers. It was so cool. But last year, the day I get there, I went to Australia, shapeboards in Bali, landed there, and my Eduardo, who owns the company of Org Surfboard, he goes, it's going to be 50 to 60. It's going to be a world record day. We're going there. And the team riders are going, Jean DiMacedo and Antonia, and they're like, oh, shit, really? So I got off the plane that night, picked up my tow board, all this shit. I was like, I had to get stuff. I was like, oh, I had to borrow. I needed pull cords and all this. Mm. Drove to them. Next morning, woke up. It was like, 50 to 60 feet.
Gnarly.
And I went from the harbour, got to see the harbour, went straight out, and it was early, and I just went, stuff this. I'm just going to get straight into it. I don't want it. And I got this huge one out the back. It must have been like 60 feet. I'll show you a photo.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite make it. I was going so fast, and the bumps, it was a whole new world.
Yeah.
And I had to learn, and I wanted to ride my Chobu one, which was fire. I didn't like him too heavy.
Yeah.
And I rode a quad. And then I got another one, and then I had to wait, and it was huge. And I was going so fast with the chop and the bump that as I was kind of kicking out, the quads were too small. You need a big thruster there, and my weights were centered, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And my board skidded out. And then I just got over it, and then there was a set. My mate picked me up, but as he picked me up, he went too fast, and I fell off. I was holding on by one hand on the sled, and I fell off, and I copped like a 50-footer on the head, and I was upside down, and I got biggest blow of my life. So underwater I pulled.
Yeah, you pulled underwater.
And I waited a while, and I come up, and then there was another one, and then he came and saved me, but then we spent about half an hour trying to get out, find the board. And then by that time, we spent 30 minutes getting out. I couldn't hang on anymore.
Yeah.
I got out the back, and then I was stuffed.
Yeah.
So I got two ways that session. And then a week later, we had the contest for the Big Wave World Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the team riders in it, Antonia and Joel. And it was so good to watch the paddling. I would have loved to paddle that day. It was the cleanest day ever.
Yeah.
But then the 2 days later, it was another 60-foot day, and they were calling World Record Day. WSL filmed it live. I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. But then at that time, I changed my board, put more weights in it, down the tail. I had to put a specific thing, change the thruster, and I went to 9 kilos. And then that morning went out, it was all filmed live, and first wave, I really felt the difference.
Yeah.
So as for me as a shaper and designer, to change my equipment, the toe to ride it, and go, oh, that didn't work, and then go back to the factory, change the things, put more thing. Shaped new ones, but that wasn't ready. I changed the original one. The board went amazing. Changed the 9 kilos, put weights in certain spots, under my back foot, on the bottom. Like all these little things I'd done. Changed the thruster, a big thruster. I went so fast, but it was keeping my tail engaged and the fins engaged. And I had so much more control.
Yeah.
So then I got two sick ones, and then I was like, I got a bit cocky. I was just like, these ones, it got windy, and the real thick, heavy ones under the lighthouse. Give me one of them ones. And then it was the first wave of set, and I just thought, like, give me this one, and go. And then it came, and it looked so good, but then it kind of backed off.
No.
And I went, and I was right near the cliff, and I went, I just kicked off naturally. And I looked behind, I didn't know it was the first wave of the set. And then there's this giant coming. He's come to pick me up, but they're so close because the canyon, it's not like Jaws or Chopu. There's no time. And as he went to pick me up, he looked and went, whoa, and left me there. and I looked, and I had this 60-foot wave, and I was on a tow board. I couldn't paddle. I was like, and I just got over it. And as I get over it, I see the next one. It's bigger, and it's starting to break top to bottom. And I had to, I had no time. I stopped. I went, and like, could you imagine what I was thinking and feeling and seeing? And I was just like, I had to like, and I just went, stop. And I went, oh, that's right. I got these cords. And I went back. I had three and I got two. But then I couldn't get under, so the thing broke. I'll show you a picture, and it explodes. And it's like probably I'm more than 60 foot in the air. Explosion, and I'm there. I'm not even underwater. And the thing just mows me. And the compression and the power, it was like it didn't knock me out. And then I had the most violent beating, and I was in the worst spot, the worst possible scenario. It was getting filmed live on WSL. My family were watching it. My friends, everyone was worried, like, looked like I was going to die. Like, I should have nearly.
What exactly does that flogging feel like?
Oh, my God. The pressure was, like, so violent and just trying to rip me apart. And I was just trying to relax in this the most violent situation, like getting punched up by Mike Tyson in a dark room and then just trying to stay calm because I didn't want to lose oxygen. I wanted to get up. I was, you know, my family's coming from my mind. And just all them years of Chopu and big, and I knew what to do.
I mean, are you trying to ragdoll,
but I'm trying to hold on to this, all my vests and my thing, because
that ripped off.
I didn't want to, and I was trying to rip it off.
Yeah.
I was trying to rip my arms off.
Yeah.
And I was going upside down and somersaults and this way and that way, and just like the pressure, like, can you imagine how many tons of pressure water at me? And it was a two wave hold down. We've blown up.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I was going, and then this force would just rip me so deep again. And I was like, man, I know, this is bad. Like, but I just had to compose myself and stay relaxed. And I go, this thing's going to send me up.
What were you thinking when you first surfaced?
When I first surfaced, yeah. I just took the biggest breath. Like,
was it foamy?
And it was foamy too. So I took some water, and it was like,
were you coughing?
It was like getting born or something, you know. I was just like, I'm alive, like, ah, like so. And then I was like, where? But I was facing the cliff and turned around. There was another one. But I got a breath.
Yeah.
But then I was already blown up, and it wasn't as intense as the first one, but I kind of went with it.
Yeah.
And relaxed. But then when I come up, I was right under the cliff, and the whole cliff is watching me. It's getting filmed live.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking that. I was looking at the cliff going, oh, no. Because when it happened to Connors, I was on the cliff watching, and it kind of pushes towards this rock, and the skis can't get you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, no, now I have to deal with this. And I was like, shit, it happened to Ross Clark Jones only like a month before. And I went, oh, that's what, he tried to get onto the cliff. So I started thinking, but I had these 30, 40-foot whitewashers coming at me, and I was like, how am I going to do this? And I took another one. And I was right. And luckily, Antonio Silva, come in. He just goes, I'm going to save him. He knows I've got kids. He actually saved her. And he come, and he got me in the nick of time. And then luckily, he's one of the best drivers in the world and flicked it. And he said after, he goes, I don't know how you grabbed after what you just went through. Most people got nothing like what happened in summer.
Was it like a but grab, like life or death for you?
It was life or death
like
for
you,
me.
You
because,
was
and the guys filmed it. If I didn't get that grab,
you're done.
I was dead.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a life or death, and I just focused and grabbed, and he got me, and then I felt within a couple of seconds, and whoosh, down across, and then he just went like this, and then just grabbed me, and then pulled me up, and I just got him, and I was like this, I was just like, and I was just hugging him, like holding tight, I was like, oh, I was just like, I was alive, you know, I couldn't believe I survived that situation.
Yeah.
And then he got me on the beach, and the guys from Ireland with the safety crew, and then
what'd the missus say? I was just like,
well, she didn't watch it live. I didn't really want to tell her because she watched, she would be freaking, but all my friends were ringing her, yeah. And they're going, has he served? And she was freaking out.
Yeah, and I was at school, but I didn't see him. I knew he didn't die.
Then they were on Facebook because it was on Facebook too live. And then my friends said to my wife, he's okay, we can see him, he's on the beach, he's okay. And, but
has
this really
experienced, changed your approach? Are you over it?
No. I was fine. I actually wanted to go back out. Oh, I got to the lighthouse, but my board and then my board got washed up, and it was right in the cliff in the zone. And as I walked, I was saying, all these guys are like, oh my God, like everyone's freaked out on the.
How old were you? This was just a couple.
This was last year.
Yeah. So what are you like? What are you like?
45.
So when do you think it's going to be over for you?
Well, because this like, is at I some point falls a chopu, and I still want. I still feel like I got more to give, and I still like to write it, but I am more calculated, at risk, and I'm only doing it places where I'm shaping. If there's a swell, well, now I'm in there with a big swell. I'm going to surf it. Like I went to Ulu's outside the Bommie, and I surfed.
Yeah, that's and a I'm little trying, bit different. Though,
but the Nazaré thing is, I had to. You got to be very careful there, super careful. You got to have the best team. You got to be trained. You got to have the best equipment. You got the best board. And
is it a completely-
I kind of want to just get one here and there still,
right.
But I don't want to spend too much time.
Yeah,
because if you do too much time out there, that stuff's gonna happen.
But aren't you the type like most of us are that one's never enough? Like That's- once you eat some ice cream, you're gonna eat the whole pint.
Kind of is like a chopu and that, but Nazaré, I get one or two and that's enough.
Yeah, but so you that, took a huge flogging and you wanted to go back out.
I was fine. Yeah, I was kind
of
cool.
That would seem like most of us would go, that's good. I'm good for the day.
I was kind of like, well, I've got the worst of it. I'm sweet now. You know, that was the worst thing that ever happened to anyone.
Yeah.
And like they were saying, this is worst case scenario.
Yeah.
In front of the cliff, caught inside, had to face that, but... And I was with Robbie Madison last night, and he's doing the same with his motocross. He's like 39 now. And I said, how do you feel? Are you going to keep doing it? He goes, yeah, I'm the same. I just keep – I still like I got more to give. Like I still want it. It's in me.
Yeah.
I have the energy. It's,
What are
you
doing?
My wife doesn't want me to, and I don't want to jeopardize that or my kid's life. So I got that, so I'm really careful.
So you are toning it down slowly but surely. Yes. You see that the dial's being pulled back just a little bit. Yes. We all still want to go surf and get incredible rides.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So I only need a little bit to keep that fire because if I don't, I feel like I'm going to really want it. So I'm just getting a little bit here.
What's the oldest guy that surfs Nazaré?
Well,
might be
there's,
you.
There's a lot to...
It might be you. You might be the might oldest be, guy. Man. I don't know.
Well, I'm going,
well Ross
I'm going
is
to,
old.
Well, I'm going to meet Gary Linden after this interview, who I shape with. So he's another shaper for Org. So it's me and Rabbit and Gary. And Gary's the biggest legend surfer, shaper, big wave guy.
Yeah, but
and
he's
he
not...
he paddled it, but he's not surfing.
I'm talking about...
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no shapers have done it. And the guys, there's a lot of Brazilians and Portuguese, but they're...
How old's Ross Clark Jones? He's my...
Oh, no, sorry. Ross is the oldest.
Yeah, Ross is like 54 or 50,
yeah.
Or maybe older.
Yeah, Ross is the oldest. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
But he's not doing it anymore.
No, he's doing
is
it.
It.
He's
is
still
he?
Doing it.
Fair dinkle.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing it. He's going for heaps of swells. So, and that's what I'm like...
He's an outlier. He's an anomaly, that
but,
guy.
And, you know, Kelly's on the world tour. He's 47.
Yeah, I'm not talking about
but I'm talking
60-foot Nazaré. I'm not even talking chopu. I get that. I think you've got that figured out. I think you can do that for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about Nazaré.
Yeah. So Ross is still doing it, and he's the best out there. He's the best. He does the best lines.
Yeah.
He's the best. And everyone says he's the best. But, yeah, I have to because... That would be so selfish for something to happen to me for my family.
Yeah,
because I am the support of the family. I'm the worker. I'm the shaper.
Yeah.
I'm the one. So
that's
why, and that's the most important. And that's so clear in my mind.
What are some of the spots that you sort of, from a surgical strike standpoint, from a like wait and see a purple blob on the map and then go?
Yeah.
That wave in Bali that you surfed with, I think Laurie,
yeah, Apocalypse.
Yeah, that wave.
Yeah.
Is that, we don't need to know where it is, but it's in Indo
somewhere. People think it's too heavy and it's too hard to find. There's no boats there, so
Is that a wave that you're like surgical strike, let's go, or did you already get that moment in time and you're kind of over that? Or is that one of, like, are there four or five places where you're like, you know what? It's on. Like right now, in fact, I think Tavaru is about to light up.
It is. And I constantly, and I love watching it. I was lucky. My dad was a surfer and he showed me how to read synoptic charts. And I love watching it. And obviously I use like surf lines and all that too. But I love watching the storms and seeing how deep and the fetches go. And the, you know, like getting down to 934 hectopascals and the fetch, like the ones for chopu, the ones for Indo and now I'm reading the ones for Nazare and now Mavericks, and it's and they spin opposite, and you know, the ones for Apocalypse, it needed a certain big swell and direction and winds. It's really hard to get.
Yeah.
But I fumbled across it in 97.
Yeah.
I was on a magazine trip and I was surfing with Drew Courtney and we're surfing this left in the bay, and it was like 4 foot. And then this bommy I could see across the bay, it was like 8 foot.
Yeah.
And I said, what's it? And I mean, they dropped me and Drew on these bommies next to pussies in the bay. And then we're looking over at this other right. The dinghy dropped us off on the bommie, and I paddled these bommies. And then we went, hey, and we got the boat, and we said, take us over to this right. And the guy at the time, he goes, oh, yeah, this is the wave. I said, what is it? He goes, oh, it's this crazy wave, but no one wants to surf. And I was like, I pulled up, and I just seen this thing just go. And I was the first one off the boat, and I just frothed, got out there. And as I got in position, these 10-foot things come. I duck dived the first one. I looked left. The thing was just giant. I was like, oh my God, the second one, I got into it. I made it. And I just stood there. And I was like 10 to 12 foot, the most perfect. But I had this foam on it from that first one. And then it got bigger and heavier. And I was standing and I rode it for like, and then I went, I didn't know. I just kept going and going. Then that death section.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, we could make this, but it was all foamy and it was like 12 foot and just throwing, like, it felt like I was throwing this room, and then it just blew me up into pieces.
Yeah.
But the adrenaline, and I kind of come up and it didn't hurt me. And all the guys on the boat were like, holy shit, just witness. They got it on camera. And then Drew came out, and it was my brother on my trip, my best mates, and they all come out, and it was kind of heavy for them.
Yeah.
And they all kind of got a few and then went in. But me and Drew stayed out just all day.
Is that where you sort of felt out the concept of, like, we've got a doggy door this end section?
Yeah. That day I was making some, kicking out some. I was just trying to go through. It was one of the best waves of my life. It was probably like 10 to 15 foot of the most perfect. And I rode it, and I pumped that last bit, and the shocky come up, and I made it.
Yeah.
The dev section.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could make it.
So was that a thing of swell direction?
And I actually wrote a 7.2, could you believe it?
I do.
And I was really – and I was lucky enough, because these days I won't take a 7.2.
Yeah.
I'll be riding shorter and thicker. But yeah, if I didn't have that board, and I tell anyone that wants to make that, you need a big board and drive through it. And I'm going so fast.
Yeah.
But now there's other ones who are like, oh, it's too big, so I doggy door.
Yeah. And that seems to be the move, right?
That's the move.
But that's only if it's Mac Daddy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the smaller swells, you can kind of get out of it before that thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So there's some smaller ones you can kick out, but most of them you doggy door. But if you want to do it and you think you can, and when I took Laurie there, years later, he done it and made it.
That's the video that I think I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Princess Island. And I took him and Dean Bowen, Charger Goofy footer from Meyer.
Was that McCullough that was in that footage too?
Yeah. McCullough was there too. Yeah. And he
got McCullough Jones.
McCullough Jones, yeah. So he's a good friend, lives in Bali.
Yeah.
And he goes there too. So he fell in love with it too. So it was me and him that always went and chased it and took a friend, or because it's too heavy to surf by yourself.
Yeah.
But that day he got heavy. He got slapped and burst his eardrum. He nearly drowned. We had to come help him to the beach. He was like, and I was spewing for him because it was pumping.
Oh, that's too bad, yeah.
But the going back years before that, Timmy Turner and guys from here, a bunch of underground chargers from here in California, from Huntington.
Yeah.
And they come and they see my videos and they come out, and I was out for the same swell. And they were camping out there. They took goats and chickens, and they were cutting them in front of me and camping on the end. We'll give them, they didn't have any boat. We'll give them lifts. And we surfed this swell and it was crazy. And I was like, I can't believe you guys are camping out. You guys are crazy. There's Black Panthers and all sorts of. And they camped out there for weeks and they were scoring it. And then we got this hell swell, and I got this same. That day I got this hell one and a 10-foot log. And I was lucky the wave was so heavy, went over my head in the barrel like debris.
Yeah. Heavy.
And then Timmy got that hell one when he was like kind of doing that layback.
Yeah, that little arch.
Yeah, thing, so. Yeah. And then it became kind of folklore and. Yeah, so
now it's pretty well known, huh?
Pretty well known, but it's hard to get, it's hard to find, and it's dangerous. In a weird way, you're in the middle of nowhere, man.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
And in a weird way, it's almost off the radar again. Like, it kind of had its moment in the media eye, you know, like 5 years ago. Yeah. And now it's kind of like, it's kind of like G-Land was like that. Like, they had the WSL event. Like, G-Land kind of, I mean, I know G-Land's never off the radar, but it kind of was off the radar for a little while.
Yeah.
And I've heard that the WSL is doing an event there next year.
I've just heard that on this trip as well. It's coming back to G-Land, which is good in a way, but I heard they're going to build a hotel and put this and that in. But G-Land's so good because that's what G-Land is. It's the jungle in it.
I know. It goes back to that Bali thing. It's like, do we really want to imprint our hegemony on this situation here?
Karamas is the best way for the Indo-Coness and the structure. They should keep a Karamas and keep G-Land as G-Land.
They're going to do Karamas.
And it's a hype. I think they're going to do Karamas and G-Land.
I think so.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, but I think so. But I don't know. Anyway.
And I thought, why would they take away Fiji too? Cloudbreak. That's the best one.
Left reefed.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I heard they're going back to G-Land, but yeah, Apocalypse, it's too heavy for most surfers.
Yeah.
It's only the full-on slab charges.
Yeah. Is the drop hard? Or is
the drop hard?
Is that the hard? Because it seems like once you're on the wave, you're just going, I mean, like, how hard is it?
The six-foot days that you can get in, okay?
Yeah.
If you ride, if you're a good paddler and a slab surfer.
Yeah.
But the big ones, man, they're hard.
There's no easy roll.
Oh, there's not. You're free falling out of the sky, and you really got to get in early, and you got to really scoop it, have the volume, and then have that low rail, and then once you make that, you're set, and then you either pump or just stand there and just the view. You ride it so deep, but it pushes you, and that's why you can make things you can't even comprehend, like a video game.
Yeah,
unbelievable, crazy. And it's just long and gets bigger, and it's so roomy in there.
Yeah.
And clean and beautiful. It's just like
insane.
Yeah. But then you're like, oh, here comes the NBA. Am I going to do it? Doggy door. There's so much going on. And then you're just like, oh, man, what just happened? Wow.
I've thrown this around to a couple of different guys, this question. And because you're a big wave hellman, you're a big wave charger, you're a big wave surfer, you've surfed all the big waves around. Have you surfed Mavericks?
No. No, so we just went there on this trip, but it's flat, but I just wanted to see it.
Yeah,
but so I'm sponsoring my new team rider is Lucas Jumbo
from
Brazil.
Yes.
So he's probably one of the best in the world.
Goofy footer.
And he's the best out Nazaré.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best, and he's only young, so he's my main team rider now.
Oh, cool.
Around the world. So I'm working tight with him. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't mind surfing on a medium day.
Yeah.
I don't need to prove myself.
No.
But I wouldn't mind surfing a medium day just to get to know it and feel it and see it and learn about my boards and just be out there on a big day to watch Lucas and be a shaper and just like – because he's
something tells me, Dylan, you're going to be catching waves. You've got that look in your eye. We won't tell the missus.
But, yeah, but my problem is that she likes it now.
Oh.
She likes got the bug,
yeah.
Which I'm kind of not. I'm happy with it, but I'm a bit scared because it's heavy.
There's a lot going on there, right?
Yeah, father-daughter. I said if she wants to do it, I want to make sure she's trained, got the equipment, and I'm going to be the safety.
Yeah.
So that's up to her.
Yeah.
But I'm not pushing it. But if she wants to do it, I'm going to be behind her.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be there. So it's good, so good for me to be with Lucas. And then I shape in Indo. They all come to Indo. And for all the Nazaré guys, for Antonio and Joe. And my Australian guys and now Lucas and Laurie Towner, of course.
Yeah.
So they can travel to and leave their boards there. And I'm going to surf and shape in these destinations and dial equipment in for each area in the world.
Yeah.
So it's so good for me to go and surf these waves and make the equipment right for them waves. I surf it and go, oh, yeah, you need this, you know.
Hmm.
You need this way. You need this rail. So Mavericks. That's why now this trip is my I got a distributor here now and selling boards to all the guys in America.
Oh, good.
I'm going to come here twice a year. And
who's that?
Brent Lodger from Santa Cruz and Jason Bulletau.
Oh yeah, Brent's been emailing me.
Yeah, so Brent and Jason, so they're distributing my boards and maybe through Billabong as well, my sponsor and Billabong shops. I'm going to see them and.
It'd be good to have you at the boardroom show that we put on every year for all the surfboard manufacturers.
I'd be sick.
Have you heard of this?
No.
Boardroom show?
Yeah. I've seen one at the US Open.
Yeah, this is a little different than
Yeah. It'd be cool.
Show just for surfboard
boarders. Yeah.
The question, though, was What if the WSL put on a or added a big wave event to the CT so that we had a world champion that was well-rounded?
Big wave? Or
yeah, a big wave event the CT. Like we take Jaws and we make it a CT event. Take Mavericks and we make it a CT event.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe if it's even... Frankly, it could be Waimea Bay.
They've got Chopu, you know, and then, you know, they had the cloud break, but then they didn't run the swell.
Exactly. That's...
Which I was like, I thought they should have ran it.
No doubt. Come on.
Because they're the best surfers in the world. And at least we were told they were. Mick and Joel surfed it. They stayed out, and then, you know, and they were just like, fuck, this but they did it, and they can do it.
Yeah, and Pat Gadowskis. There was plenty of CT guys that were doing it.
Exactly. You know? And I was like, because we were going to go on the swell. We were surfing the swell, me and Laurie Towner. And we were like, we could go, but we can't go because the contest is on. They're going to run the contest.
Yeah.
They've never not called the contest off because of a big swell.
Yeah.
And we all wanted to watch it, but then they called it off.
I know.
And we were like, oh, we should have won. You know, we were spewing.
I bet.
But then I was spewing because I thought it would have been so good for surfing to watch the world's best surf that wave.
I agree.
So, yeah.
What do you think about a big wave event on tour? Because my feeling is, look, we've got this Kelly Slater Surf Ranch where they're just like this man-made killer machine, super fun wave.
Yeah.
To even this out, let's put these guys also in a real situation so we have a well-rounded world champion.
I think that would be awesome. I'm so good at it, and that's why I'm going to see Gary, because that's his baby, the big wave world
champion. I've asked Gary this question. He does not agree with
me. Okay, so I think it's good to keep it separate, same. I think the same.
Oh, dude.
But I think there should be more. I think there should be because, okay, the World Tour didn't want to do it at Cloudbreak. I think Cloudbreak should be on the Big Wave World Tour. And I think it should be separate because most of them guys don't want to do it.
Well, that's my point. What kind of world champion, best of the best?
Yeah.
I mean, I want my world champion to be able to go paddle out with Dylan Longbottom at Massive Mavericks and handle it. And usually they can. And I would say to you that 15 out of 20 of them can do it.
Yeah,
there's a few where you go, that would be weird if he actually became the CT world champion but couldn't actually surf Waimea Bay.
You're talking a whole different ballgame because most of these contests, they're riding their 6-0 real lightweight board, and then they got to ride a 9-foot gun.
So you and I both know that this is what Mark Richards did. This is what Peter Towner did. This is what Reno Abalera did. This is what you did when you were on the tour. And I'm just saying –
true.
I don't want to see a world champion come up, some little flyweight that's just like, he's our world champion and he can't even, that's not really my champion. I want to be able to go, John Florence, I know that guy's going to do it.
Yeah.
Gabe Medina, I know that guy's going to charge. Yeah. Like I said, I think 8 out of 10 of them will charge it.
Yeah. I fully get that for sure because that's how it was and that was so cool. That's what I grew up with. And that was my heroes. Heroes, and that was Shapers too.
Margo would have charged.
They not only surfed the small waves at the Coke Classic, the 1-2 foot, they surfed Waimea on their guns, but they also made all their guns, the boards.
Yeah.
They made their guns, and that's what we grew up with.
Exactly.
going back to the separate, I'm stoked for us big wave surfers, we actually got a mini tour that we can't.
I know.
Get on the main tour and to get for the dub because I couldn't do it. I wasn't that good of a contest surfer.
But I'm not saying take that away. I'm just saying add one event to the CT guys. Oh, I get it that you guys are specialists.
Yeah.
Totally get it.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan and I want to watch.
So if they could still have their thing and I want it to grow and have more events like it, I want to have a one at Chopu when it's 10 to 15 when paddle size. Or I want to have a toe comp at Chopu. Yeah. It's only toe size.
Yeah.
I want to do these new things for the future, but they're specialty events.
Yeah.
You know, or at Chipstones like we did. I was there at Chipstones the other week. We had done the Red Bull Cape Fear.
Yeah.
But, you know, we should have done it when it was bigger. Yeah. But
I was a little disappointed in that.
Actually. Yeah, yeah. So
I know that you guys are trying hard, but it was so hard to live up to the first event that they did. The first event was so good.
Well, they tried to get all the conditions right. They should have just went for the macking swell and didn't worry about the winds.
Yeah.
You know, they should have just went macking swell and do it toe only because it's too big to paddle.
Yeah.
And that's what I said to them. I said, if you want to do it, just have it massive, and that's what people want to see.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I look at everything from an end user standpoint, and that's why the one down in Sydney was insane, because it was just everyone was glued to every wave, and it was just happening, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
The last one. But yeah, so, live and learn.
Yeah, so live and learn, and that's what I said. And all the we had a bit of meeting with all the surfers, and us guys were working on it. I was on the safety. I was on the ski driver. And we said, let's just run it when it's big. Don't worry, trying to get the elements right, the wind, the direction. Just make sure it's massive.
Yes.
Because that's what it is, Cape Fear.
Exactly.
And that's what the people want to see.
Exactly.
It's not a World Tour con is.
No.
So, yeah. So that's going to happen for sure.
With a little bit of Cape Sneer.
Yeah. So I would love to see a Mavericks or BG, like that size. I would love to from when it's that big, like the Swell Laurie surfed last year.
Yeah.
I would like to see Fiji back on it and just run it when it's massive.
Yeah.
And then that's going to really sort the crew out. And it's going to be probably the most exciting event to watch online.
No doubt.
Right? For everyone.
Yeah.
I reckon.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
No. EPS foam versus poly.
Okay. I was always poly. But now over the years, and because I still love surfing tiny waves with her and my kids in Australia, we get a lot of small stuff. I'm here in the middle of summer. I brought all my epoxy. I love it.
Yeah.
For waves, 1 to 4 foot,
yeah.
I cannot – 1 to 3 foot, sorry,
yeah.
Or 1 to 4, depends on what style of 4 foot wave. But I can't beat the speed and that extra zing and yeah. And my paddle power epoxy gives me.
Yeah.
Okay. And how much extra glass and light. So when you surf 1 to 2 foot waves, you want them light and you got this extra speed. So light and speed in weak waves, you want to surf better, you got to ride epoxy.
Yeah.
But when the waves.
EPS.
EPS. Yeah. EPS / epoxy. But then when the waves are good, when I really want to engage that rail and carve, I can't. I love the PU.
Yeah.
And for the guns.
Yeah.
And tow boards and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? The way it flexes, I find the epoxy when I got a bit of face and going too fast, I can't keep that rail engaged the whole way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm a bit disappointed. Like, I'm loving seeing Kelly surf the epoxy, but and I think a lot of people like me, when he's in his contest, when he gets back on that PU, I just like his lines a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I like the poly. You know, you can really
like the EPS pops out. Whereas there's a dampening effect with the poly, where it just will hold this stress,
hold this line. Yeah. So, I love the poly when there's a bit of face. You know?
Yeah.
But light and the epoxy when it's small, it's light and fluffy and it feels good.
Yeah.
But when you want to really get that rail in and draw proper lines and drive,
yeah,
I think poly is the best
for sure.
Yeah.
How does somebody go about getting a Dylan surfboard?
So dylansurfboards.com
is
the best way, or people get me through Instagram, Facebook, but through my website is the best, and they're available in Portugal, Org Surfboards. They're available to shops here and online, my Bali surf shops, my brother's surf shop in Australia, Quiver in Peru. I shape with them. I go to there every year. Japan, they're everywhere. So, cool. But the best is through my website, dylansurfboards.com.
Yeah. Well, good. Summer, thank you for sitting in on this and being a part of this. And Dylan, thanks for being a part of the podcast.
No worries. Appreciate thank it. You very much.
Hey, if you like the Boardroom Podcast, we've got plenty more on the backlog that you can listen to and some great episodes coming up. One with Pat Rawson soon. And then we'd also like you to visit our sponsor, theboardsource.com, and Neat Essentials for wetsuits, board shorts, and other gear. And if you get a chance, perhaps leave a positive review and or subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Thank you.